John Wainwright, beginning to visit with Russell this Friday, it's Thursday, the 24th of January, 74. Channel Wainwright, and beginning to visit with Russell this Thursday, the 24th of January, 74. John Wainwright, and beginning to visit with Russell this Thursday, the 24th of January, 74.
And she'd read a report. I mean, it was a pleasure. It was just no effort at all. But you see, when you're not used to it, you don't want to do much of it. You see, you just want to talk. I think it's nice to have this distinction. You see, if you can separate the opinions from the just the ordinary incident.
You don't editorialize, sort of.
But he does it a lot of what you might call controversial things. But he's got a good bit of the other, and it's remarkable how he holds on to it. It's very hard to get length. Those old curtains over there, I can't move them. They're wore out. They're tear. Now, this is one of the one spot. This is sort of, he ran in the start where it's sort of given his beginnings, the people he saw. And he says, yes, that's right. You can't look at William Jennings Bryan from the point of view of the monkey trial. You've got to come out and see what he said then shouldn't be taken in. But what you want to look at is see what he stood for when he was at the height of his powers. My goodness, the things he stood for. Now you see, he's leveling off, and he got not controversial at all. See, he was one of the first to come out with the popular election of senators. Senators used to be elected to state legislatures, and you know, the money in. See, that's not opinions. It's just commentary. Old Bill Bryan was one of the first supporters of the state of an income tax. In 1912, when the Democratic Party was split ever which way, see, he uses even the countryside language ever which way. Why, he held it together behind Woodrow Wilson. If it hadn't been for Bill Bryan, it wouldn't be a liberal. Well, now, I don't know whether you ever heard him speak or not. Right into the instance. It's like all your Mississippi people.
Yeah.
And you see, that's the trouble with putting them behind you. You put this behind you.
Yeah.
I used to drive 100 miles to hear him talk, hear the old man. And I didn't care what the subject was. Isn't that marvelous? I was at a lunch with him one time in Kansas City, and he was—he had a bowl of radishes and a plate of butter in front of him, and he buttered the radishes and ate them, and that was his whole lunch. Well, now nobody had a voice like old Bill. Now you see how it goes. They didn't have anything like this microphone in those days. You didn't need it, you see. He made a political, he made a statement here I'll never forget, and so on. And he told that, and then he went on, he said, to make a beautiful speech. Another time I heard him in 1900, the Democratic nomination was here in Kansas City, and I was a page. The hall there could hold both houses of people. there were 17,000 people, and I was up in the roof guard. From where I was watching, he didn't look more than a foot high. And as I told you, he didn't have a microphone, and I could hear every word he said. I don't forget. You see, there's no opinion. There's no opinion there. But you can't, you can't just transfer from one world to another, and you live in a world of opinions, and you see, opinions heat up the conversation.
Mm.
If somehow or other, you see, you just stay with the experiences, and little incidences happen, they have meaning, but you don't bring them to a point where they heat things up. Now, you see, I've never had the opportunity of doing what you would do, of being in that landlord organization. And just, you see, you could try some of these things out and see how that works.
Yeah, they would. They would, because you have to... you can't hit people over the head with things.
Yeah.
You can't just go in and tell them what they're supposed to do, even if you know what they're supposed to do.
That's the way to get a bad start.
You can't be dogmatic with them. And you can't... And you don't want to be. I mean, it's no good just to push people around. That's not going to help anybody. You're not going to be any better off. Because the point of it is to get people to be able to take care of themselves. You know, not to be scared of their landlords. That's part of what we're trying to teach them. Trying to get them to learn, really, not trying to teach them, is not to be scared of their landlords. Because the landlords are stronger. And they can evict people, and they can raise their rent, and they can turn off the heat. So people think, you know, they can't give the landlord any trouble, that they have to be nice and good and sweet and just take it all the time. And what we tried to do was teach them how to get something for themselves, to get what they were entitled to, what they were paying their money for. And there would always be people who would say, it isn't nice to go on rent strike. We can't do this. It isn't a nice thing to do. And it was hard to tell them, to get them to see that it wasn't a question of being nice. It was a question of them, that they ought to have heat and hot water. You know, and they ought not to have rats and roaches all over the place, and they ought not to be scared to have their door locked.
Now, there's nothing like this has ever come up back in Mississippi, has it?
No. When I go back to Mississippi, people don't really, they don't understand it. You know, they don't really know what it means, because there's not very many apartments. You know, and there are not very many cities, and out there, everybody lives in the country or in these little towns, and they really don't know what tenants are. So, you know, they ask me what kind of lawyer I'm going to be, and I say a tenant lawyer, and they go, oh, yeah, sure, what's that? But... It's easy in a way. If I said I was going to be a civil rights lawyer, they wouldn't like that, you know.
Yeah.
They'd writhe on the floor, but
yeah.
But tenant, that's all right.
Well, let me see. You've been sort of talking around, and you're still in your you're still in the world of ideas.
Yeah, I see. There's,
but
there's,
now, let me tell you, you don't want to strain and be self-conscious about it. You'll get into it just naturally, just a little at a time, you see. And I just like this saying, you see, on old Bill Bryan.
Yeah, yeah, it started off with all the things he stood for.
Yeah.
And wound up with the him eating radishes and butter.
Yes. And he'd drive 100 miles to hear old Bill Bryan.
Mm-hmm.
He didn't care what the subject was. Isn't that nice? And what that does, you know, Russell, it frees your mind. Opinions grip you. And this opens your mind, frees your mind, and lets your mind look at, he's gone 100 miles to hear old Bill Bryan, and he don't care what the subject is. And this is what he heard. He tells you what he heard, don't you see?
Mm-hmm.
I didn't read it, but he tells you what he heard. And you see, you're looking at old Bill. And experiences don't separate you. It's the opinion, you see, that separates you. And sort of keep your mind in here. Now, I worked in this, you see, is very simple. But it takes a long time. You have to work in a long time. I used to see that, and they had a. See, I've taught various kind of courses, and you see, every time I got a hold of one, well, I try to make something of it. For instance, for one thing, I just didn't want to stay there and be bored. And, you know, one of the worst courses that they ever had up here was called Advanced Composition. Well, as far as Advanced Composition goes, you see, I don't know anything about it, but that don't matter. You see, I can make something of it once you get a little experience. And what I found in that was that these chaps up here had all sorts of experience, all sorts of it. And if you let them talk, they'll get into the experience. If you let them write, they'll get into all these hot ideas. If you let them talk, oh yes, they'll do that. And, well, I did that term after term.
Mm-hmm.
And I had classes in that. You see, that it was a little 300 course, but I had people from all over campus, and some of them were just, I mean, they were brainy. I don't mean exactly that. I never went in so much for brainy people, but they were pretty much alive, and I just learned no end from. I learned from them, and you see, I learn a lot more than Debbie does from whatever she does. But I got no way of proving that. But I mean, I learned. That's where I learned.
I can
see it in somebody else. So it looks so simple, but it comes after a considerable time. And none of your law professors or your lawyers can do it.
Mm-mm.
Or any of them. I don't think any of them can anymore. Now, at one time, you see, when law, like I said to you the other day, when they didn't meddle with you, they just let you come for 6 months and give you a little certificate and away you went.
Yeah.
Well, it didn't meddle with you. So. Mm-hmm.
But now they treat you like they have to train your mind, and they tell you that your mind is mushy and they're going to sharpen it up for you.
Yeah.
And they get you going on all sorts of crazy questions.
Like that one on who owned the car.
Yeah.
It was impossible.
Right, yeah, and they do little tricks.
Yeah.
So you get to be very tricky, but that's all.
Yeah.
You don't,
Well, now you see, in the things we do out here, there's no subtleties. Well, you'd think so for a while. Now, I'll tell you one of them. You see, And when y'all were out here the other day, I didn't know what y'all been talking about, you see, and Debbie didn't give me any cues. One of the obvious things in the countryside, they talk about just about anything. And you'd say, well, they're talking out of school. They shouldn't say those things. Well, that's not it. The thing of it is, they don't have any private life. Everything they do is perfectly public. They talk about it. Well, I brought several of them out here one time, and I brought my letters out here. I just written 5 letters, and I brought the letters that I was answering, and then the ones that I wrote. And I read 1 or 2 of them, and I said, here's the rest of them. Be glad for you to read them. If you don't understand them, I'll explain them to you. Well, the thing of it was, don't they bring that? But they never did. Well, that's that business.
Yeah.
But the idea is, now that's, if you call that a subtlety, but it's a whole new conception of the world from what we have, you see. We withhold information.
And country people give information. They always.
Yes.
They talk about each other all the time. What they're doing. Yes. And what they did in the past.
Sure. There's no difference for them. The date doesn't matter. You see, it's part of the experience, you see, has no date. If they look at it, they live it, and they do. A lot of them, they live in that experience. Now, you see, let me tell you, there's a thing there. Well, now you think this is subtlety. I don't think so, because I've been in this much. The countryside is one thing, and the small town mentality is almost basically different. Mr. Weaver, as it happens, lives over there in Meganopis. He's that small town, but he doesn't have much of the small town mentality. Did I couldn't work with.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I don't like the small town mentality. Well, now you see, I work in the countryside because it's satisfying to me. I like it. When they start talking, it seems like the care, my muscles just relax and the cares roll off my shoulders. That's my own feeling, you see, and I wouldn't expect anyone else to feel that way. But you can see how it would be that way. So the talk I have with them, I'm not talking with case histories or specimens of people. I'm talking with my close friends.
Mm-hmm.
Now, J.R. is not my meat. He has that faculty of sustained reporting. And he can look at that surgery of his, you see, and all the incidents surrounding it, and they see that's the way the countryside does.
Mm-hmm.
He does that. For one thing, he's not very smart. And even in the countryside, a little brains goes a long ways, helps out.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Now you take over here to Dodge, Berman and Shirley. Berman doesn't know it, but he's highly gifted. Now, he thinks he's a carpenter and a plumber. And you see, he don't have to take a course in it or have someone explain to him. He can just sort of look at somebody doing it out of the corner of his eye and go home and do it himself and do it better. Well, but the greatest gift he has that I've seen is reporting. Why, he can report, and it's just so circumstantial. I said one time when his family was gone, he came over here and ate, and I got him started on the pets. I said, Ms. Dodge says She says, if it wasn't for you, they wouldn't have all them sayings. And that got her started. And he can take that little monkey they got, and he can tell one episode after another of that monkey. And the children just the same. Well, it's just phenomenal how the man's mind works, you see. But he don't understand that. He doesn't realize that. And as a matter of fact, he's so gifted in that way, you see. A gift changes people. I mean, it's hard on a person. You see, it's a tail that wags a dog.
Mm-hmm.
It makes it hard on you, and you don't realize it.
Mm-hmm.
Most of my life, you see, I made it hard on myself. I was aesthetic, and I had a certain gift for language. Well, nothing exceptional, but at least it was there. Well, I was pretty well alone before I realized it, and as soon as I did, I got rid of both of them. I got so I wouldn't talk straight language and use good language. I wouldn't use it. I'd break it up. Now, I can't talk the language of the countryside. I mean, I wasn't brought up in it, and I'm too old to learn it. Mr. Weaver used it. It's more natural to him than the school language.
Mm-hmm.
And well, you say this there's a lot of subtleties, but these aren't subtleties. These are just very large points that you sort of get into. Now you see, you act stiff. Perfectly stiff now when it comes to talking the language of the countryside, but you wouldn't be if you look what you've been through up there. Well, you say some of these other people, like Debbie and some of the other people I've worked with, you say they've got all these gifts. They're not like that, but they were. And I don't know, it's just one or two little distinctions. Now, what I thought of last time, just by,
mm-hmm.
because we talked about it with Debbie, you see, now, this French experience didn't come easy. See, for one thing, she was not conditioned to her typewriter, except at 30 minutes at a time. Well, that won't get you far. And it was hard on her. She didn't complain, and she fought her own battles. And she got it up to the point where she could sustain it. And then she had got back here and taken a couple of months before she got here, and she'd lost all the French experience. She'd
mm-hmm.
lost it. She'd got into something else. And to get back into it, she did it sort of easy, like nobody pressed her. And she started out on Eddie, the letter carrier that she met up there. Around Boston. He died last year. And she wrote on several peripheral things. For one thing, she went back to Greece
mm-hmm.
and did a few things that they used to talk about
mm-hmm.
before she could even get into the French experience. And then she did it little by little, you see. And I had things going out here at the time, so it wasn't just her by herself. She worked into it. I had several people who would come and go, and that made a difference. And Cookie was here a good part of the time. I don't know, Miss Guthrie is over and all. I tried to cut down on that a little bit so I could do some work myself. That's why it's quiet out here now. I don't particularly care for the quiet, but I have to have a little quiet to work myself. So you see, we kind of, in a way, held her to it.
mm-hmm.
or enabled her to stick with it, however you want to say it.
Yeah.
And what I saw was that if anybody was going to write from experience and say the experience of the countryside, they'd have to start with their own. And I could do even better than that, you know, if you can do it from fiction, too. Use it as experience. So, but now, you see, neither one of us looked back at that French experience until this last fall.
Mm-hmm.
And the reason we did it then was, you see, we'd held together so long. And everybody needed a little break. And I thought, we got to have something to show for this. So I got into that. I thought we could knock it off in a short time. Well, now, I'll tell you, I'm telling you too much. as I got into it, I saw that I hadn't understood it. Well, I hadn't seen much in it. And everything in that little thing I wrote at the end is true. I mean, none of it's made up. It's just as close to history as I know how to get. So those first pieces of hers that I opened up when I started, that's what enabled me to get into them and see them.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where I got the first glimpse. I didn't know it. I thought the reverse was true. I thought she was losing a great deal but not staying around here at least a month or so in order to find out what we'd found out. Well, as it happened, you see, it's pure circumstance. Events took over. As it turned out, you see, her mother and her godmother, Phoebe, and seemingly Katie Osborne, all of them can do what Debbie does, and she does it because they can do it. She can, you know what I said there, they can stay right with the occasion and go home and reproduce it. And see more in it than I'd see in a year and a half.
Mm-hmm.
And they don't even look. Well, that's something that was clear out of my, clear. I never dreamed of anything like that. Well, that's what I was forced upon. She didn't know it either. Critically, she didn't know it. So, you see, one thing just leads to another, and you see, you just keep sort of pushing, or keep the subject home, I don't want to say it. And you make it. I tell you, it's better when you're associated with three or four people doing a little of the same thing. Now you see, Debbie and them were associated with some of my friends, like the Van Arnhems. See, I've lived with them. They're the ones who found this place.
Mm-hmm.
And I happen to be out here. And Ms. Van Arnhem, Florence, she talks more in the countryside, and she's trained. I sometimes think she knows more medicine than the doctors do, and she's a nurse, and she's raised all those honorary youngins of her, and there's just no end to her capacity, you see, her abilities, there's no end. There's one limitation, she can't write. She can't read very well. Well, let me tell you, let me go back now, that real quick. You see, on that thing that I did, to go along with Debbie's pieces. See, it's her stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But, well, all of this is sort of a long story. I used to read Conrad The Heart of Darkness and the, what's that long thing he did? The, don't you know? And those. And what I did, I read him completely wrong. I read him like Kipling. And I had doubted my reading all along, and I would ask. The fellow next door to me there had written a book on Conrad, and I said, well, now give me a cue or two. Oh, he says, you can look in this book, and this book, and this book. Well, hell, I didn't have time to go over to the library and look at one book after another. Well, the way it turned out, I got one article by the one man, the one critic of Conrad that could help me. He gave me the cue, and that's all I wanted to know. See, I don't want to know all about Conrad, but he gave me the critical start, enabled me to read him. Isn't that amazing? Well, I think it works with all these artistic things. I don't think you can just pick up a piece of art of anything, Milton to rock and roll. I don't think you can do it. You've simply got to have some critical statement to start with. And if you use your own, and if you don't, you see, you got that critical approach, and what you do, whatever you got, you take it into it and you struggle with it. I've written that out in one or two little essays, but I wouldn't recommend them to anybody. It'd choke them. When you read something like that, you're constantly shifting your ground and trying to make it fit what you read, you see.
Yeah.
It's a constant struggle. So it works with that little piece too. Now, so far, that's not Debbie's gift, and I would have some doubt about some of the things that she cued you in on about out here, for the simple reason that her critical statements are not as sharp as mine.
Mm-hmm.
But you might learn, I don't know, you still might learn more from her than you would from me. I don't know. But you see the difference. You hear her talk.
Mm-hmm.
You hear me talk.
Mm-hmm.
And you can see the difference.
Sure.
Well, the thing of it is, you see, you don't want to push anything. You say, well, I'm so poor on critical statements, I'll just go take a course, and this seminar will fix me up. It may fix you up all right. Or just make you a little bit, take the edge off, just blunt the instrument. You see, there's so many things that we found out here. You see, the institutions can't criticize themselves. And furthermore, they're very sensitive. They don't want to criticize themselves.
Done.
Well,
and they're not going to.
Yeah. No, and they're not going to tolerate much of it, are they?
No.
And more than hell. Well, so what it means is, if I write an article in there and I say something bad about somebody, it has to be about myself. I wish you could stay around, and be sort of free for a little while, anytime. And that is when we're working on
mm-hmm.
something. I mean, when we got something going. I don't have anything going now. I'm trying not to have for a little while. Get in on it. Especially with somebody like old Leslie Sweet. He's such a nice fellow to work with. I tried to get him out here last summer, but I didn't make it.
What's he do?
Oh, hell, Debbie can tell you about him. He makes A-plus and everything without trying. Isn't that something? And and then he remembers it. But he doesn't tell you about it. And you know where he wound up in?
What?
See, he's one of the best pianists Faye ever had. As she taught him in part. She and several of the others. See, he learned so fast. One person couldn't teach him. He wound up, of all things, in Greek. He seemingly reads Greek, and he didn't start it until he was in college. He seemingly reads Greek better than I read English.
Mm. Mm.
But he never talks about it. She'll tell you about it. But I found that the countryside, you see, I don't have any brief for countryside. I take them in the favorable side. The favorable side is the talk from experience. Their faculties, you see, they have a capacity for experience.
Mm.
Somehow or other. And then of reporting on it. Now that's the only side I take. If you take them on the other side, you find them, they're stinkers.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You just despise them.
Mm-hmm.
They're suspicious and all sorts of things, you mm-hmm. see. But I don't want to fool with that. I don't want to do that. I just take what I can use from them.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the thing.
Yeah, that's really different from the small town doesn't have the capacity for experience like that. I don't know why.
I don't either. The only thing I have in my, the only thing I can think of is the day in living space. I think more or less it was the older mentality, and what you get is preserved a little bit better in some of the people who still live in space.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't know. But I think that was the whole mentality, and I think I think even the learned people shared it. Retained it. Up to what date, I don't know. A lot of things you can date. If you want to try, if your background is considerable enough. But you don't want to, none of it, you see, none of it you do it straight. Now, what, let me tell you, now that we go out there and do what it is. Debbie could do, or anybody I work with, they could just stay in touch with you. You didn't have to talk. You wouldn't do it in writing. But you could do a great deal in a couple of weeks.
Mm-hmm.
If you ever had a chance to come down here and spend a little while, you see, it wouldn't be in trouble at all. You see, she could get down, she could start and get down. I'd say these are the things that Mississippi background is pretty rich. I'd
mm-hmm.
love to know about it, and I don't know who wouldn't.
Mm-hmm.
And actually, you see, as you look at it, you'll see things you've never seen before. I mean, everybody. I mean, that's just the way it works.
Yeah.
Especially mm-hmm. now that you're old enough to look at it.
Yeah.
And you're not involved in it personally now. That is, you're not subordinated to it.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Somewhat detached.
Yeah, that's right. But but that's rich. That is rich. And then, of course, I don't know how it would work out on paper, but you pretty well established yourself in the printing, in the work you did in the printing,
mm-hmm.
book publishing. So you see, that's worth going into. And then on the side, you see, you got into the action, and now you see you're getting into the legal side. Now that, how many is that? 1, 2, 3, 4.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you don't have to stick with those, but that's your areas you'd start with. And you see, pretty soon you'd have a 100-page book.
Mm-hmm.
And
mm-hmm.
And the thing that started me on Debbie, that gave me something to work with, I wondered why, I told you that, why it was that all these bright people from the best schools, silence. They never got their voice. Well, you see, I found out a good bit about it from Debbie and the others I worked with.
Mm-hmm.
But more from her, because she sustained it more. And you see, through her, I see you. You see, it's just borrowed. I'm using somebody else's information.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And I see why you don't have any voice. Well, Debbie says you do, but you don't. Not in my sense of the word. You
yeah.
do amongst the landlords, say, but you don't in general.
Yeah.
Your classmates don't hear what you say.
Yeah.
And you've got something to say. Well, you say it's not the final word. Well, who gives a damn about the final word? Let's go. But I think that's, now that's what I meant. That's one of the things I saw that would come out of that French experience. You see, it would, and when people take a trip, when they come home, why in the hell don't they let on? Instead of saying, well, you've got to go over there sometime.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, I'm going to have to redo these tapes because I'm the only one on them.
Someone right around 600 or 700 at the end of the visit with Russell. This Thursday, the 24th of January, 74. Beginning to visit Mr. Eastman when he put in the screen door about Friday sometime, I'll write that, the 25th of January, 74. Somewhere along there, maybe Thursday.
It's pretty healthy.
Well, I was afraid I'd get into something out there. Mr. Eastman, had you rather work on a new house or an old house?
Well, it's nicer working on a new one, but yet I haven't worked on a new house in 10 years.
Oh, you haven't?
You work on an old house, there ain't no place to stop.
Somebody's got to repair them. I went over and fixed one the day before yesterday. Had the whole room built on and had kind of a flat roof on it. And then they had a railing stuck around on three sides of it.
Around the roof?
Yeah. Well, where that railing, they put the damn hole down through the tin to hold that railing on up there. It got to wiggle a little bit, you know, and the water was running in. So I had to take some black stuff and make a good big gob of it there and coming up and make it tight around the top there so that it won't leak in. Well, then where it leaked in, the damn siding there, the paint was coming off. So I had to scrape that off and paint it.
That's a thankless job, isn't it?
But I get into all kinds of messes. I had to go down and murder Sharky the other day and put a carpet in the bathroom. Geez, you come to fit that around the toilet and fit it around the bathtub and fit it around the lavatory. And then she had an offset in the bathroom there, and you got to fit around that. But that damn carpet had a rubber back to it, and boy, was that something to cut.
Oh, really? Yeah. I hadn't thought of that.
Yeah.
And all you had were just some old shears.
Yeah, well, I took the tin shears to it, but geez, it was awful stuff to cut. You couldn't cut only about from 3/8 to 1/2 inch every time that you come up.
Oh, Mr. Eastman.
You couldn't cut
it
much.
It wouldn't cut it straight, would it?
Well, I cut it straight, but.
Well, you know, one thing I can see about what you do. You see, you know how to fix all these things, Mr. Eastman. You can fix them and think about something else.
Yeah.
It makes other people appear so dumb.
I was down to a fellow named Camel. He had two houses down there, the old house and the new house. Well, when they built a new house, they just run an underground cable from the old house over to the new one for lights. Well, that's been 6 years. Now the power company found out about it, and they're making him put a meter on the new house. So, I had to go down there, and we had to go down to the zoning board and get a electrical permit to hook it in there. Well, then we got it hooked in last Friday, or got it ready to hook in last Friday. But the inspector was supposed to be there Monday morning, first thing Monday morning. Well, I told Camel, I says, I doubt like hell they're coming up here first thing Monday morning, because in the forenoon, them fellas don't figure on doing anything when they're hanging around the office down there. In the afternoon, they'll go out and look at a couple of places. And but they guaranteed they'd be there Monday morning. Well, they didn't show up all day Monday. So Tuesday, he called them down there. Why, they said that green ticket is stuck right in the meter box. Well, he says there ain't no green ticket stuck in the meter box. And we were here all day yesterday and he never showed up. Well, he did. He was there. Well, he wasn't there. The goddamn women down there in the office down there, they don't know where them fellas are or where they've been or anything about it, but they'll swear to God they've been there. I had one do that same thing with me once before. He swore to God he'd been there and he hadn't. Well, then they come up and everything was okay. So the power company, they hooked on, and I went over and cut off the old line that come in from the other place. And They got the power company to hook it up there, and got juice. Well, geez, about half of the house, they didn't get no juice in. Well, I didn't know anything about their having another box on the other, on the new part. They built the new house in two sections. The first section they built there was run over from that other house. Well, then they built this other section on over here, and they went in under the house here, and where them wires come in under the house to go up into this meter box in there, they tapped on under there and run another line over to this other meter box for the other part of the house. Well, Campbell didn't say anything to me about having another box in there.
He didn't remember it.
So, when they couldn't get no juice the other way, then I went looking, and he said, well, I got another meter box on this other side, and he said, and that's all dead. Well, then I said, Jesus, he's hooked on somewhere, so I got down under the house, and then I found out that they'd come in over on this other side and run the wires up and tack them along on the top and run over in there.
3-day work week there, is
so
it?
So that, he had run this other line out there. So what I had to do, I had to cut this off back here, back of where he tapped on. Then we had to pull these wires up and get them up into that other box there again, because we'd cut them off.
Yeah. Huh.
So we had to get them back up in there and get on and put on another breaker in there and get the line over to the other part. Campbell said, by God, I'll just say one thing. He said, you know what you're doing? Well, I said, I'd auto. I've been at it over 50 years. Now there's out there by the pool, down there at the Trade Winds, the restaurant, they've got two lights that Gus Blanton put in there. Well, I don't ever remember seeing them lit up. But they claim that the fellow mowing the lawn mowed the wire off. Well, I went out there after dinner here, and I dug and dug and dug, and I couldn't find no wires. And I don't ever remember seeing them lit up. So we're going to find out from Barnard when he gets home. He wasn't home. Find out from Barnard if he ever had them lit up that he remembers. But I don't remember ever having them lights lit up.
The lights up there, and they're still not wired.
Yeah. Well, then they've got a light in the pool to light the water in the pool out there, and that's gone bad. And the socket is gone. Nobody knows where the socket is that was in there. They've drained the pool. It's all just as dry as this here. And the socket is gone. And there's just a piece of insulated wire that's comes into the pool there, and it looked as though that it had been been pushed in tight into a socket, see, that squeezed down onto it. But the socket's gone. I don't know where it is, anything about it. But I have seen that lighted up. But Gus Blanton, when he come there, he took and put that hard top back in around there, you know. And after he'd had that in there, they put the pool right to the edge of it. Well, where the bank comes up to the pool, here there's, about 2 feet back here where the dirt is put on top of the hard top in there, don't you see? Well, now, if they had put the pool in before they put the hard top in there, that wouldn't be like that. And if they'd have put them lights over there before they put the hard top in, the wire would be underneath. But if they didn't, they'd had to cut a slot through them through that hard top in order to put the wire in there, don't you see? So I can't figure out where they ever had those lights lit.
Well, they use a pool.
Yeah, but they got that Trade Wind sign that stuck up out there, and that lit it all up out there,
right.
See? And then they had a pole light out there, but this new guy in here, he don't know what the devil he wants anywhere, what he's doing. They go and takes some of the bedroom suits and motel unit over there and go and paint them black. I says to him today, what the devil's the idea of painting them black? Well, they said we had to get something to cover up the dirt that was on them. Well, Jesus, why didn't you wash it off?
Well, that's a new man?
Yeah, they sold it, you know.
Oh, I didn't know that, Miss Easton.
Yeah. Yeah, Barnard sold it. Yeah, the three of them bought it. There's a preacher, and Eddie Seiler, and a fellow from the High Line.
Well, that's a combination.
There's a lot of them wondered and said to me they couldn't see why a preacher would get in with Eddie Seiler. Well, I said, I'll tell you, he ain't no better than Eddie Seiler is. And Eddie Seiler's a regular outlaw. He's always been noted for having fish traps in Orange Lake. And then he got in a mess, and he went and shot a lot of wild ducks and started selling them. And they got, and they caught him at that, and they said cost him better than $5,000 to get out of that deal.
Good.
There were two of them in on it. Or if there were three of them in on it. And it cost them better than $5,000 a piece to get out of it.
And he's one of the owners of the Tradewind.
Yeah, he's one of them that's bought in. He runs a store, you know, down there the other side of North Marion Market.
Yeah.
Oh, Seiler.
Seiler, Eddie Seiler.
Yeah.
You ever been in there?
Huh?
You ever been in there?
Well, not too much, because I don't like him. I never patronize him down there.
What age fella is he, Mr. Wheeler?
Huh?
What age fella is he?
I don't know.
Well, I don't know him.
I don't know what nationality he is.
Yeah. There's some fella that works down there. You know the woman that works there? That Ms. Helm?
That works for Seiler?
Mm-hmm. Oh, she did.
That fat woman?
Yeah.
Well, I knew who she was, but...
Yeah. I haven't seen her there.
I haven't seen her, no. Not lately.
I don't know whether it's there or not.
But she was in on that deal, too. On that, because they caught her selling them out of the freezer right there in the store.
Well, she was in on it.
See, yeah.
Well, she didn't have $5,000.
No. I don't know how the devil they did make out with her.
And her old man, you know, got that crippled knee.
Yeah, well, I don't know much about her.
Well, he worked down there for Huff, you see. And he had a cartload of those oranges, and you know how you take a bale of those fence posts. Well, you cut it on one side, and then you go on the other side and hit it, and you know that thing will cover you up before you can see Jack Robinson.
Yeah.
Well, that's what them orange boxes did, Mr. Weaver. And you see, they were so big, they pretty well fixed up his knee, and he can't walk on it much.
Yeah.
And it won't cure. I don't know why your knee is so hard to cure if you get something wrong with it.
Well, I'll tell you. The cartilage that goes over the top of your knee, you know, your kneecap there, is made just like your fingers, see? And anything happens to it, that cartilage gets in there, and them cords in there begin to turn just like that, just like your fingers would turn, see?
Yeah.
I know my boy had a car jacked up, and the jack slipped out, and it came down and hit his knee there somewhere, and they had to take part of his kneecap off because they'd all loosened up in there, and they were just rolling, see?
Oh.
And it would roll his knee right out of joint. Now, that's the way the surgeon explained it to me.
Yeah.
Well, I don't want to get any closer to that. Not to be any more serious than it is.
And he says it'll just them cards will roll. He said, and that's just rolled it right out. My boy had that trouble with his knee there, and then after a while, he lost his whole leg.
Your boy?
Yeah. He's only got about a 6-inch stump here on this one side.
Oh, really?
I didn't know that.
And he wears a wooden leg, and he even bowls with that wooden leg.
Oh. Doesn't seem to bother him too much then.
Huh. No, he gets around pretty good with it. And there's another fellow that was in the...
Now, Mr. Eastman, what is this? This $8.98.
$8.91, that's the balance of what you owe me.
Well, did you add in the that other trip that he made up here? When you fixed
I didn't make no account on
that. What was that?
You fixed something up here one day, Mr.
Window cords.
Yeah.
Yes. So what was that?
Well, I don't know. Never mind that. And, he was driving a truck for the limestone company, spreading lime. Well, up at the quarry, where this lime come down, it went into what they called a blender. And this blender there was a worm went through there, you know, an auger went through it, and then there was a water pipe on each side, little holes in it. Well, as the lime goes through there, it squirts a little water onto it and wets that lime so that when it goes in the truck, it won't fly all over everywhere, see? Now, on the other hand, it adds a little weight to it, you know, when they sell it, see?
Mm-hmm.
So, well, this blender there was flat on top and rounding on the bottom. Well, when the lime would quit running out of the lime bin up there, down into that, they had a sledge there. And they used to step up onto that and hit the ceiling up there to start the lime running again.
Yeah.
Well, gee, they'd done it for a number of years. And my boy stepped up on there and to hit that just same as he'd done it for a good many times, you know. And the damn top of that was rusted. And his foot went right down through it, and that worm caught it right there and just caught right in the back of his shoe here. And just run his leg right around that worm in there till it created enough back pressure it blowed the fuses. Blowed the fuses on the motor that turned that, see? Well, Jesus, they called up, or they didn't call. I was uptown there, and it happened early in the morning. And Jesus, the fellow's son that owned the lime kill up there, come down looking for me. And he said that Harold was hurt up there. Well, Jesus, generally, when anybody gets hurt up there, they get killed. Well, I thought they was kind of putting it kind of easy to me, you know, and they wanted me to come right up to the quarry. So my brother was with me, so we went up and we got up there, and I drove up in front, and I says, my brother, you get out and see how bad he's mashed up. So we went, and he came back, and he said, well, he's caught in the blender up there, and they're trying to get him out. Well, you know, before they couldn't get that thing undone, they had to take torches and cut that worm in two before they could get him out of there. They couldn't get it, they couldn't back it up. They couldn't do nothing with it, you know. And there his leg, the bone in it, they said, was broke about every inch from just above his knee right down to his ankle. So I went right home and changed my clothes and They were going to take him down to the hospital. Well, I got down to the hospital, and they had him in the emergency room. And he just laid there on one of them, oh, I don't know, what the fuck do they call them things they wheel them around on, one of them cart-like, you know, stretchers. And I went feeling of it. Well, Jesus, the nurses come out, and boy, they give me hell. I says, listen here. I says, this is my boy, and when he get around, I'm going to tell you what to do with that leg. Well, they guessed that I wasn't going to have anything to say about it. Well, I says, I'll tell you that I am. And I says, when the doctor gets in here, I says, I'm going to tell him what to do with it. The doc come in, and he felt it all over, and he looked up at me, and he says, well, I said, doc, I don't know much about surgery, but I think the quicker you take that leg off, the better off that boy's going to be. Doc walked right over, and he put his arms around me, and he says, God bless you for that. He says, you're right. Now, he says, that bone, he says, is broke about every inch. I said, yes, I know it is. I said, I felt of it. He says, we can string them bones, and they'll probably grow back. He said they probably wouldn't be exactly straight, but they'd be so that they could be walked on. But he says, the thing is, the nerves and the blood vessels in there are all smashed. And he said, now we could operate on him, he says, and keep right on working at it for a week. He says, and you couldn't get them blood vessels back where they belong. Well, I said, that's just the way I had it figured out in my mind. And I said, I told the nurse that I was going to tell the surgeon what to do with that leg. And why, I said, she gave me hell. And he just laughed. He says, some of them like to blow off.
And they did.
Yeah.
They took it off.
Yeah.
I'm telling you, Mr. Eastman, you can get pulled in mighty fast. I'll tell you, I was down there putting on the power takeoff on that big old Alex Chalmers.
Yeah.
And I was putting the universal joint on it, you see. And there was a bolt on it. And you know, I've done it many times. You see, I'm supposed, it keeps moving, you see. When it's running,
yeah,
it won't stop. I'm supposed to stop the motor.
Yeah.
Well, I didn't think of it. And furthermore, I wasn't looking up there, and it caught my hand up there. And I'm telling you, it got my hand right here, and it stopped that thing going around. And nobody there to haul a calf rope to.
I had a cousin that was bossing a cannon factory. And he always wore frack and overalls, just same as I do, with frack on the inside. Well, this day, he'd been doing something, didn't have no frack on, and it got a little bit cold, and he slid the frack on over the outside of his overalls. Well, you know, they used to take those machines in the cannon factory there, and they had the belt run on idler pulleys, and then if you slide it over, it would run on a stationary pulley, so it would run the machine. They used to take your hands, you know, and just take and slide them belts back and forth from one way or the other, you know. And he went to slide that, and Jesus, his overhauls caught in it. And it wound him around the damn shaft, and as they said, it took every piece of clothing off of him but his stockings. His shoes and stockings are still on. The rest of it, and he pulled his arm pretty near out. Well, he had an awful time getting over that. Well, then here, oh, maybe 20 years ago, I had a fellow working for me, and he was under the truck. We was going to put a heavier fish plate, and on the frame, you know, And he was under there drilling a hole through there. Well, something happened that he pulled the drill back out of there, and it dropped down, it caught right on his pants leg.
Uh-oh.
By God, you know, it pulled half of the clothes off of him. And he was hollering to beat all, and I was running there and trying to pull the cord. And by the time I got the cord pulled, it had half of his clothes wound right off of him. Right in the electric drill.
You know, that old half inch drill will really get you.
Well, that was a half inch drill.
Yes, sir. It goes slow, and you think that's an innocent thing.
Uh-huh.
I don't mess with it, Mr. Weaver.
There was an old fellow in town had a 3/4 inch electric drill. The only one that I ever saw. And he was a civil engineer on water, and he was very strict. You could do any piping in the house for him, a pipe had to be plumbed with a plumb. And your pipe run flatways there, horizontal, you had to put a level on that, and it had to be an eighth of an inch to a foot drop on it every time. Well, we was putting in an up and down, putting a radiator upstairs, and putting this pipe up beside the wall. Well, it come down, and there was a big beam down in there, and we was boring a 2-inch hole. Well, geez, it run into a knot. Well, geez, when it run into that knot, geez, the bit stopped right there like that, and the drill and I went right around. Well, I clicked it off, and I had a fellow working for me that, oh, he claimed to be a lot brighter than he was. And, what the hell is the matter with you? He said, you can't hold that drill. Well, I said, let's see you hold it. He ran over and grabbed a hold of it, you know, and Jesus, boy, he went around and around and around. Well, Jesus, you know, I went out and got a pipe about 6 feet long and stuck on the handle on that drill, and it was all the two of us could do to hold that thing then, and it drilled right down through that hardwood knot. That 3/4 inch drill turned the bit right down through there. The half-inch drill wouldn't have done it. She was just bolted.
Yeah. I never had something. No. See, we was making a hole in something, Mr. Eastman. What was that? Well, it was so hard to hold the drill. What was that?
Probably drilling some iron somewhere.
Yeah. Oh, it was. I don't remember, Faye, but it was a very mischief to hold that thing.
Yeah.
And if you didn't watch out, you see, you'd get wound up in it.
Yeah.
And then what? And then you couldn't get loose of it. I think that was down at Pappy Kyler's.
Yeah.
Something we were doing down there.
Might have been.
Because he did everything over
yeah.
there.
Yeah. Well, he had a lot of good tools down there, you know. And so I made a muss out of it that I didn't buy his table saw down there.
Oh, you did,
oh.
Yeah.
Huh? We thank you.
Mr. Eastman, how's that nice new television set?
Yeah.
Your television set, that nice new one you got.
Yeah.
Doing all right?
It's a Magnavox.
Pretty good.
Why? It's getting better now than what it was. The color on it. But I've never seen a colored television yet that had as good a color to it. As a Zenith.
Oh.
And I had figured on buying a Zenith. But my daughter and the son-in-law, they was to this auction, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And there was that $750 colored television there, a year old. And they bought it for $40.
$40. Mm.
My goodness.
So they brought it on up there for me. They didn't have any idea of buying it for no $40 when they bid $40 on it.
Yeah. And
they got it.
Well, that's, do you have it up on top of your trunk?
Yeah.
That's a pretty good place for it.
It's up on top of a chest. It's
chest, yes.
The chest is almost as big as the top of this table here.
Yeah.
That sets up on top of that.
Now, you never tried those earphones, did you?
It's a floor model, you know. It's supposed to sit on the floor, but...
You never tried these earphones, did you?
I tried them here one day.
Yeah, and you didn't like them?
Ooh, they're all right. But that television down there, loud enough you can hear it all right. But the color on it there, sometimes the color will be too red and sometimes too green.
Oh, that's
Well, I haven't picked these up since you tried them on.
Yeah.
The first time. I use them. I thought I'd use them when I got them, but I never use them. I thought, you know.
Well, some television sets have a place right on the side of them where you can take and plug one of them in.
Yeah.
But ours don't have.
Well, that's it. You've got to have one put on. Well, this little one in here has got a place.
I know the old fellow up home now that used to come down here and winter with me. He had a television set with a place, you know, plugged in like that, and he'd sit and listen to that, you know, and be turned down so that there couldn't anybody.
You can put a cord on this and set back there, you see. Put a cord on it. You don't have to set right up there.
Yeah, I can hear good with that.
Well, why don't you get one?
Well,
I'll get you one.
I'd have to get the place put on the side of it, see, to plug it in, too.
Well, I'll get it for you. I'll get one for you.
What do they cost?
These?
Yeah.
About $15.
Huh?
About $15.
$15.
And it costs you about $10 to get the plug in.
Costs you about $25 all told.
Yeah.
Well, I'll tell you, when next time we have something go wrong with the television there and we have a television fella up there, I'll see that he's getting him put one in.
He can't do it up there. You got to have it in the shop.
Huh?
He can't. The television people don't do it very well.
They don't.
No.
Who does do it?
Well, you have to take them to the electronic people.
Oh.
I've done it, but I've got one a friend down there in Ocala who can do it.
Yeah.
Did The simplest thing would be just to get one of those little old sets like that in yonder.
Yeah.
And then you can lean on it. And
geez, we got three televisions that's all in working order down there now.
Oh, have you?
Yeah.
Well, just any of them. You don't care which one.
No.
You got a cable down there?
No, we got just an antenna come down, you know.
Yeah.
Well, I'll see you about that and see what...
Well...
See what he thinks.
We sure appreciate this, Mr. Beefman. Sure appreciate you doing this for us.
John 1 right around 1700, and end of visit Mr. Eastman this Friday, the 25th of January, 74. Channel 1 right around 1700, and the end of visit Mr. Eastman this Friday, the 25th of January, 74. Channel 1 right around 1700, the end of visit Mr. Eastman this Friday, the 25th of January, 74.